Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hi there, you're listening to Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and this is Heritage Radio Network. Today, I'm talking to Kirsten Rogers, who is here just on a brief trip from London. And she has joined us because she is researching supper clubs, underground supper clubs, and artisanal food makers, because she happens to be involved with that a lot in London with her own supper called the Underground Restaurant, very appropriately enough. Thanks so much, Kirsten.
I'm also known as Ms. Marmite Lover. That's my internet name. I've now come out of the kitchen.
You're not going to find too many of those over here.
No, I don't think so. Marmite, have you had it? Have you tried it?
No.
It's a sort of thick, dark brown, salty
liquid. I've had Vegemite. So.
It's very similar to Vegemite. It's the British version of Vegemite.
Yeah, that's the Australian one. Same thing.
So, but first of all, when I started, obviously I wasn't sure about the legality of what I was doing, and my blogging name was Ms. Marmite Lover, and it's only recently that I've let people know my real name.
Oh, sorry.
That's fine, okay. Because I've got the book coming out mid-April, and that's under my real name. So.
Oh, okay. So, transition.
Yeah.
All right, guys, this is Kirsten Rogers. Okay. And your Twitter name is still Ms. Marmite Lover.
Ms. Marmite Lover.
And you tweet quite a lot. The blog is marmitelover.blogspot.com. You also have, is that the Underground Restaurants website?
I have a group site as well, which might be very useful for listeners. It's called supperclubfangroup.ning.com. And it has a worldwide directory of supper clubs, underground restaurants, and home restaurants.
Oh, my goodness.
So while I've been here, I've went to visit some of the ones I'd already heard about here, particularly in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. But actually, I've discovered a bunch more, so I'm going to be adding those to the list.
Terrific. And so, okay, what is a supper club?
A supper club is a generic term for underground restaurant or home restaurant or pop-up restaurant. So it's not a conventional high street restaurant. It's often in someone's home. There's often a fixed menu or a themed menu, large tables which you mix with other people, you meet other people, because in a conventional restaurant, when do we meet other people? We never do. We're not encouraged to talk to other tables, uh-huh. Are we? And what else is there? Sometimes it's amateur chefs. Sometimes it can be professional chefs who perhaps want to do a different kind of food from the restaurant that they're working in.
Right. I see this is so interesting that you're writing about it and people are really catching on to this. There was actually just last week in AM New York, there was a little list of supper clubs you got to check out. And Studio Feast was in it. You went to Four Course Vegan.
I went there last Saturday night. Chef Matteo and his girlfriend Carly, who was doing front of house, that was fantastic.
And you went to Brooklyn Edible Social Club
on this Saturday night, just gone. That's his name's Andres.
Yes.
Andres, yes.
Something with a V, the last name, I forget.
Me too.
Yeah, I haven't been to that one.
It's very high end food. His. He is a professionally trained chef. He worked at the French Laundry.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good food.
So what does that blur the line between what is an underground restaurant and also does all this publicity and, talk about it? And does that, because, usually a lot of people had this thought that they were secret. They were like, word of mouth only.
Yes. I think... the food regulations seem to be stricter over here in the United States. It seems like people have to be a little bit more careful about the secrecy.
Because it's illegal.
Britain, I'm not sure if it is. Uh-huh. I'm the first one there. I studied 2 years ago. And first of all, I was quite careful. I was very, careful to not use my real name, not give out my address. But I've had my kitchen inspected and passed by the local council, the local environmental health officer. I've got public liability insurance. I pay my taxes. So I'm doing everything I possibly can to be legal. See.
So it is an LLC, I guess we'd call it here. I don't know if it's called that over there, but it is a business that you have.
It is turned into a business.
Yeah.
I think if you do it once in a while, then fine. But if you're doing it every week as I do, you know, you have to declare
every
it.
Every week, yeah. Did it start out as a hobby, just like a fun... dinner party?
I was chefing at various restaurants, things like sort of anarchist vegan co-op cafes, and I was chefing in unusual places, a bit like Roberta's here, similar vibe.
Nice.
You know? And basically, I wanted to do my own food, and I didn't have the backing of the money to set up my own restaurant. So I thought, I have a nice apartment. I have an Arga oven, which is a large cast iron oven that's on all the time. Why don't I do it here?
Mm-hmm.
I announced it on my food blog, and next thing I knew, loads of people came out of the woodwork, wanted to come.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if anyone
That's
would come.
Crazy.
And the Guardian newspaper came to the very first night, which was quite scary.
Wow. What do you serve?
My first menu, I think I did roasted tomato and garlic soup. Gratin dauphinois with smoked salmon salad.
What's dauphinois?
Dauphinois is a thinly sliced potato in loads and loads of double cream, very thick cream, and baked for a long time.
So we would call that potatoes au gratin.
Would
here.
You?
Okay. Gratin. Rotten, whatever.
I like potato dishes. I'm a big fan of carbs. I think carbs are... I want to open a restaurant just called Carbs.
Hey, that doesn't sound too far. We got butter, we got fat, something.
Yeah, potatoes, fatty, bread.
Yeah, there's a lot of those fun names. That's funny. So it was a big splash and it was a success. And then you're like, hey, I'm going to do this.
Absolutely. The first 6 months, it was crazy actually, because I was learning how to run a restaurant in my front room.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I was kind of dealing quite a lot of media and TV and radio all getting in touch.
That's exciting, though.
It was very exciting. Quite
people
dizzying,
are getting
though.
Behind it, but you did it because you wanted to create your own menu and do it your own way.
Absolutely.
And have fun with it.
Absolutely.
Which you can do, you know, if you're working in a restaurant that's somebody else's restaurant, I guess.
I'm not very employable. I can't take orders very well. So I have to do what I want to do,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I'm a self-motivator, a bit of an entrepreneur, but I can't, yeah, I'm not very good at working for other people.
Well, there's always going to be, you know, people working for you then, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I had lots of volunteers at my front of house, kitchen assistants. A lot of people asked to come and help, sometimes because they wanted to start up their own and they wanted to learn how to do it.
Right.
Nowadays, I have certain valued regular volunteers who I pay, but... Mm-hmm. At the beginning, I didn't have to pay for stuff.
Okay. So it seems like the more, and I've started a supper club too, which is now in kind of remission, the Hapa Kitchen. And I've done a lot of other supper clubs with Michael Serino, who we were hanging out with the other day, and Danielle Castagno from A Razor, A Shiny Knife. And they would say that, you know, a lot of people say to someone who runs a supper club, why don't you become a chef and open your own restaurant? And they would say, well, this has nothing to do with a restaurant. We're
Absolutely.
Doing things that are, it's a theatrical production and it's different every time.
Absolutely.
And it's not a restaurant.
I take care not to do restaurant style food.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the
You're
pro
not
chefs.
Bound by those expectations, I
Absolutely.
Guess.
Absolutely. I mean, for instance, New Year's Eve, I did a meal in which I made a gingerbread village. Lots of houses.
That's cool.
And actually, you could call it a gingerbread slum.
And everybody could.
It was a bit crooked. You've got to learn a lot about
broken
architecture.
Broken candy windows and
basically.
Graffiti, ganache.
And then I put one of these houses on each table. And at the end, for dessert, got to smash it up and eat it.
Aww.
You'd never get that in a normal restaurant,
no, you
would
wouldn't.
You?
And, you know, it's totally different. You're right.
So it's much more theatrical food. and I'm both in the kitchen and I come out and talk to all the customers.
Mm-hmm.
I as I said, I do a lot of themed meals. I did one meal based on the Virgin Mary. basically.
What did that have in it?
Oh, that was a lot of what they call Marian type foods. Things like rosemary or marigold. These are all foods that are associated with the Virgin Mary.
Okay.
I had things like lots of cheeses made by monks and nuns.
Okay, you had virgin cocktails. No,
I did have a Bloody Mary.
Okay. Well, okay. So I'm also thinking that this is a trend that I see a lot, and you know, the success of your restaurant, underground restaurant, the underground restaurant, and other underground supper clubs has taken everyone, you know, maybe by surprise, but it's been definitely a huge reaction. They've become very popular, and I see a trend in restaurants that are actually going in ways that are unconventional.
Absolutely,
like Momofuku Ko.
Yes,
one example. There's that place, What Happens When? Have you heard of that?
I've not heard of that.
It's like, it was in the Times a few weeks ago, and the premise is like, the decor is going to change constantly, the food's always going to change, because the restaurant is actually only going to be there for a year, so they're not investing on any fancy silverware or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's going to be this pop-up, basically, for a year.
Excellent.
And, you know, even something like daily changing menus is really...
Yes.
Taken on, and that's a great thing, you know, because it's seasonal, but the average diner, it changes your experience a little because you don't know what's going to happen, and people expect to order the same thing all the time sometimes, and yay, you're going to be surprised.
I mean, we all have certain restaurants which do certain dishes that we love. We go to that place for our spaghetti vongole or whatever, and that is really nice and comforting, but it is nice to play around with the concept. I do think it also keeps the owners and the chefs, the people that work in the restaurant more alert, more alive, more enjoying it. It doesn't feel like a proper job, mm-hmm. just a production line.
And it keeps you and the cooks, I guess, feeling creative because you get to come up with something different every time, every week, yes. In your case.
I definitely think that the conventional restaurant industry are adopting the clothes of the underground restaurants. Now more of them are doing prepay and fixed menus and shared tables and some of the things that we've pioneered. I mean, one of the things I realized very early on, the first week, in fact, is I have to get people to pay in advance because I have no walk-in traffic. And the first week, three people who promised they were going to come didn't turn up. And suddenly I'd made a loss. I had all these ingredients, you know, which they didn't come. So I got in touch with a ticket company that normally sold tickets for rock concerts. And I said, look, do you want to sell tickets for my dinners? And they'd never heard of this before. I mean, now everybody's mm-hmm. doing it, but...
Well, a lot of people haven't heard of what the heck are you doing. And I have to explain to people all the time. I'm like, no, it's like... they're like, you're a caterer? No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and also the great thing about running a supper club or an underground restaurant is, I mean, I'm open one night a week. I think the grind of going in every single day. I mean, as we all know, the kitchen is it's a tough place. It's a tough mm-hmm. work environment. And chefs work 16 hours a day every day. And that's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
So I can choose, especially as a woman and as a mother, I can choose my hours more. Plus the fact I'm working from home. It's a great entrepreneurial match, actually.
Yeah. So consistency is on the out in terms of not only food, but also people's schedule, you know.
Absolutely.
It changes up all the time. That's exciting.
Yes.
So you have a song we're going to put on, and we'll be right back. This is Kirsten's song she picked.
London calling, see we ain't got no swing. It's for the rain, and the crunch of pain. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going thin. Engines stop on him, but I have no fear, cause London is drowning. I live by the river.
All right, London is calling. This is Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and this is Kirsten Rogers from London. Just in town for about a week.
10 days.
Ten days.
It's been great. I've loved it here.
And what did you get to do while you're here? You went to two supper clubs?
Four Course Vegan and Brooklyn Edible Social Club. I wanted to see more, but it's hard to get it, you know, to schedule it.
Kind of
because they are quite sporadic. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons my other site, Supper Club Fan Group, ning.com, is good, because you can see the list in advance, write them all, say, before you're going on vacation, and try and book in nights before you go. Because if you leave it until you're there, it's probably too late.
That's one of the other differences. You have to actually plan ahead to go to a supper club. You can't.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's limited places. They don't do it all the time. So you have to book in advance. But since I've been here, I've been trying to meet sort of DIY food people. It seems like there's a tremendous scene going on here, particularly in Brooklyn. People, the crouters, the picklers, the fermenters, the cheesemakers.
What was the first thing you said? The
crouters. Making various sauerkraut, things like that. And I've tried to encourage that in London. I've set up something called the Underground Farmers and Craft Market.
Oh, wow.
In my house, my two-bedroom apartment. I have also got a garden. I had three of these farmers markets last year. The last one was in December, and I had 45 stalls, and 500 people came.
Do you think that... I mean, these are traditional crafts, right? Making kraut and pickles. Is it not so common in London?
It hasn't quite caught on.
Yeah.
The canning craze has not quite caught on in Britain yet, but it will do. I'm going to try and make sure it does.
I guess we do have a canning craze here, now that I think about it.
The canvolution.
Canning is cool. I think I wrote a headline that said that. That was a good one. No.
But we've got a lot of cheesemakers now. People are smoking things in their back garden, smoking fish, making rillettes, various kind of, you know, smoked meats.
Oh, yeah.
And pâtés.
There's a new guy, Brooklyn Cured, over here.
Ah.
I'd like to talk to. Good stuff. Rillettes. Wow. These are you know, these are so rewarding to do by yourself, because you can really play around with it, and anything goes. I mean, with the spices and pickles. I think that growing up, I thought pickles were only garlic and dill.
Yeah.
But, or cucumbers. You could pickle anything.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's what, the creativity is what brings people onto it, maybe.
Fermented food is very good for you. It's good for your gut, the fauna and flora of your gut.
Yeah, that's true.
So I've been trying to encourage people to do that. My house, by giving them a forum. I've charged nothing.
Carbs,
so far.
Then pickle.
Carbs and pickles, they go together well, don't they? I mean, I have in the kitchen, because, I mean, normally you go to a farmer's market, it's in some car park somewhere, a bit windblown, it's a bit miserable.
Right.
How I've reversed it. What I've did is I didn't charge the stall holders. I charged people to come in.
To
come into my house. So I had an entrance fee.
Oh, wow.
And then, so in the kitchen, for instance, there were cooking demonstrations.
That's a new idea.
I was using every part of the house.
It's like an experience, too.
It's definitely an experience.
It is an experience when you go to somewhere like Brooklyn Flea or even the Green Market. I mean, you get to meet the farmers and talk to them. How cool is that?
Yes.
And people pay to go to panels where you could see the same farmers. Hey, you could see them in action doing their thing if you just walk into the Green Market. That's what I like to say. Anyway.
We had a kind of Dragon's Den. That's a TV program in Britain in which millionaires, basically, people pitch their business idea to various millionaires, and they see if they want to back it. But we did there was no millionaires involved, but we had people who deal with food, like grocers and food industry experts, and small companies came and pitched their idea.
That's a cool idea. And you hosted that or organized it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that was part of the farmer's market.
We should do that here.
It's really, it was fascinating just to listen. Like, someone came with their salad dressing and they were saying, oh, the bottle size is wrong. You need to get a bottle that fits on the shelf. You know, lots of little things that you just don't think about.
That's really interesting. And to see what people are thinking of making too and yeah. making. Cool. So your book, you're writing a book about this.
Absolutely. Well, I've written a book on supper clubs. It's called Supper Club Recipes and Notes from the Underground Restaurant.
Love it.
It's published by HarperCollins. It's available on amazon.co.uk. You can pre-order it now. It will be out on April the 14th.
In America?
It will be out on amazon.co.uk.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But I think there's a lot of interest in America in this book. So hopefully it will be published in the States
and
as well.
And it covers where? Everywhere?
It's basically... it's partially a cookbook. Mm-hmm. It's also got guest recipes from other supper club hosts. It's a how-to.
That's terrific.
You know, how a to 12-step program on how to start your own supper club.
That's fun.
And a bit about my background and the history of supper clubs. And at the back, it's got a worldwide directory of supper clubs.
We'll have to have a book exchange.
Absolutely.
I should have brought you a book. I wrote a whole chapter about supper clubs.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, in The Art of Eating.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there was only one book written in really about this new wave of supper clubs.
Yeah.
Called Secret Suppers.
I've got that book, yeah.
But a lot has changed. I think it's evolved.
I think so. It's spread a lot. And my the book I've got, I mean, it's quite high production values. It's very glossy.
Cool.
It's all full of color.
Oh, wow.
It's beautifully designed.
And I said by cover, like, is it for in London or is it
it's,
all over?
I've got guest recipes from New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of them are British. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping another book I'm going to do is going to be more concentrating on international supper clubs.
That's great.
So that's one of the reasons I'm here. I'm researching that for the future.
Oh, wow. But, good luck with that. That's going to be a fun journey.
I mean, there's loads of it in Buenos Aires in Argentina.
Really?
It's a huge, it's Latin America, it's a huge place for supper clubs.
Oh, I'd like to know, like, the cultural reasons why. Because yeah. I have a pretty good understanding of why people start them in New York. But...
Well, I first started mine because I didn't even know about the ones in the States at that point. Mm-hmm. It's because I went to Cuba in the year 2000 and I visited paladares, which are like home restaurants. And that's where I got the idea from. I thought, well, this would work really well in London. I mean, when you're a tourist, you go to a big city, New York or London, and you look at the sights and you eat at the restaurants you're supposed to eat at, but you never really feel like you know the place. You don't necessarily meet a New Yorker or a Londoner. Mm-hmm. You don't go to their house. Yeah. And that makes a difference. So it's on the long term, at the moment it's quite trendy, but I think on a long term basis it will last because it's actually fantastic for tourism.
Yeah, that is true. You can start that up. Wow. And let's talk about the downsides. Are there any... you know, issues involving legality that's a concern for a lot of folks.
I mean, obviously, I don't fully know the differences between here and Britain. But, I mean, I've had problems because, for instance, I'm called the Underground Restaurant. And London Underground, the tube system, the subways, are suing me because they have trademarked the word underground.
They can't do that. Okay, I know the Underground... Food Club, what are they, based in Madison, Wisconsin. Have you heard of them?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, everybody uses the word underground in their company.
It's,
so why
it's
doesn't
our
the tube
word. It's not their
them?
Word.
Yeah.
I think this is a worrying trend that companies, corporations, are trying to grab parts of our language, our common language, and turn it into a commercial thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, underground has more meanings than, I mean, I'm not running a mass transit system.
How about we trademark the word food?
Yeah,
nobody can use food.
Yeah, well, I'm sure a company has tried. Or Apple, you know, have they trademarked Apple?
All right. What about restaurants? Do you hear any complaints like you're taking away business?
A little bit, first of all, but actually, I think I've had a lot of support from the conventional restaurant industry. Yes, I think they've realized, I mean, I'm doing 30 covers a week. Mm-hmm. I'm not really taking away business from them.
Yeah, once a week.
Yeah. You know, if I was going on every night, perhaps it would be a bit different. I think they've, as I said, they've adopted a lot of tricks from us. And they've realized that, I think, if you're interested in food, I think it encourages the whole food industry. If people are interested in food, they're probably going to go to more conventional restaurants as well as supper clubs.
Right.
So it's a boost for the whole industry.
That's what I think too. It's expanding the range of experiences that you can have with food.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember years ago when I lived in Los Angeles, I used to see these advertising placards saying, when you're here in Los Angeles, go and visit Knott's Berry Farm, Disneyland, and go to the beach. And the people who paid for that advert was Knott's Berry Farm. And you think, why were they advertising Disneyland? Well, the reason why is because every time somebody, when their visitor figures went up, they went up for Disneyland as well. I mean, they went up across the industry. People uh-huh. wouldn't just visit one attraction.
How can I make a trip worthy?
Yeah, let's do all of it. So, as I said, you know, I think it's good for the whole industry.
All right, and same with your food markets too. I think.
Yeah, I think so.
From the supermarkets or whatever, underground markets.
Food is the new rock and roll.
Yeah. That's awesome. I can't wait to hear more about it. And I hope somebody we have our markets here, but that's a really interesting concept.
Yeah, at Brooklyn Flea yesterday, I saw there's one woman making ginger syrup. I think she started a supper club as well.
Oh, really?
It was absolutely gorgeous. There was people making their own chocolate, all kinds of things. It's very mm-hmm. interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the folks at your market, are they like all licensed food makers?
Nope. that's why it's underground. But you know, for people worried about safety and food hygiene, well, when you go to dinner at a friend's house, do you go and inspect their kitchen first of all?
Mm-mm.
You trust them. People who are doing this, because let's face it, with food, it's lots of hours. You don't make a lot of money. It's because you love it. And if you love it, you don't want to poison people.
Yeah.
You're going to take a lot of care to make sure that your kitchen's clean.
It's easier to do it once a week too, and to
Absolutely.
Do it with care.
Yeah.
So
my kitchen's a lot cleaner than a lot of professional kitchens I've worked in.
I can imagine. You do it, and you make food with more TLC
Absolutely.
Than the short order cook.
I think so, yeah. So I don't think it's a problem. I don't think people should worry about that.
I think we just vindicated ourselves then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sorry that today's your last day, but I'm so glad you could make it here. And
thanks for inviting
me. I'll be reading about your adventures. Check out Kirsten's adventures in Brooklyn on her blog, marmitelover.blogspot.com. That's also her
That's
tweet
right.
name. And if I'm ever in London, I'll have to check out your restaurant because it
actual,
sounds really
actual,
tasty.
Thank Carbs. You. The actual blog's called The English Can Cook.
Oh, okay. There we go. I'll check that out soon. Thanks so much, Kirsten.
Thanks so much, Kathy.
Good luck on your book.
Thank you.
See ya.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.